If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at www.tn4action.com. That's www.tn4action.com. You can also download past shows of Inside Tennessee from our website as well, or visit conservativenationradio.org. Welcome to the show today. We have some great guests lined up. We'll have Representative Judd Matheny with us here in just a few minutes, and Kyle Mallory, a teacher, a former state employee, and a very dedicated and involved Stewart County Republican Party chair. You know, if you read the news today, if you listened to anything, you probably heard something having to do with how the federal government has once again overstepped its bounds. You know, much of what has happened in the last 4 or 5 years with the Tea Party groups, 912 organizations, and other liberty organizations are a result of the federal government overstepping their bounds. Now, we've had some level of success here and there. All in all, we're really not getting it done in a lot of ways. I hate to say that, but it's true. There's one key component to success that's missing, and that's to get the states to stand up to the federal government. If we are ever going to be successful in reducing the size and scope and reach of our federal government, we have to have the support of our state governments. We can't do it on our own. Can you just imagine if you had 20, 30, 40 states stand up to the federal government, not just in Obamacare, and it was great that happened. It didn't turn out exactly how we were hoping in terms of that lawsuit. But on every federal issue, if we had states standing up and refusing to comply, right? Now, obviously, there's a money hook. That's one of our challenges as citizens, is to convince our state legislators that, hey, look, the money we get from the federal government for these different programs, these normally speaking unconstitutional programs, is not worth what we're giving up. So we have a task at hand to convince them to cut off those programs. If they're important enough to be funded, we have to find a way to fund them ourselves. But the key is getting the states to stand up, and we have to do that. And our Constitution lays that out very clearly. I'm going to read the 10th Amendment for you, and most of the people listening to this are probably familiar with it, but that's what it's all about. We have to get it back to the states. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. We've got to put some teeth into that amendment. You know, that amendment was never revoked. People act like it was. Many in our state legislature act as if it's no longer in force. I mean, obviously, many at the federal level, they don't give it a second thought. So our task is to ensure that our guys stand up for the 10th and hold the feds accountable. That's one of the things that we have to do. Now, we do have some people that do a good job of that in our state. As a matter of fact, our guest today, Representative Judd Matheny from Tullahoma, the 47th District of Tennessee, he's done a good job with that. Him and a few others have towed the line and done everything they can to try to make sure that the 10th Amendment is respected. And along those lines, there was a committee formed in the last session, and that's commonly known as the Balance of Powers Committee. I think it's actually the Joint Legislative Oversight Committee. We'll get clarification on that when Judd joins us here in just a few minutes. But we're going to talk about this committee and, you know, what it can do for us. It's not a cure-all. It's not the end-all, be-all. But we've got the man on the line who can give us some clear guidance about what we can actually expect out of this committee and why it's important. Thank you, Representative Matheny, for being with us today.
Oh, hello, Dave. I'm glad to be. Thank you very much for the invite.
Well, hey, it's always good to have you. Now, I'm calling this the Balance of Powers Committee, but the correct name is Legislative Oversight Committee, Joint Legislative Oversight Committee?
Yes, sir, Joint Legislative Oversight Committee. It's gone by a couple of nicknames. One is Balance of Powers. The other is States' Rights Committee. And they've been this type of committee that would perform function similar to or related to what we're going to perform if there's been legislation filed to call the Balance of Powers Committee in the past. But this one was actually constituted as the Joint Legislative Oversight Committee. It consists of five members of the House of Representatives and five members of the State Senate.
Okay. Now, I kind of talked about it before you got on here as far as I understood it, but to remove any confusion, what is the purpose and intent of the Balance of Powers Committee?
Okay, the purpose and intent is to look at issues that are coming from the federal government, whether they be actual laws that could be as simple as initiatives, which means legislation and rules are to follow. It could be rules. It could be executive orders. It could be unfunded mandates. We want to look at issues that on the surface appear to be violating the rights of the citizens of the state of Tennessee or infringing in any way on our liberty, or we want to look for issues that should be better left to the state of Tennessee rather than the federal government. And if we can identify on the face that an issue should is better to be handled by the states or perhaps not even handled against Tennesseans at all, then we also want to look at it.
Yeah, okay.
And
we want to
really look at the interrelationship between state and federal government with an eye cast towards what the federal government is doing. We're not really concerned with this committee about necessarily what the state is doing. We have other committees to do that. This is the one that looks at what is the federal government up to, what are they planning, how are they planning to implement it, and it's a way to further educate our citizens. It's a way for our citizens to be able to express some concerns that they have and open, shed some light on some concerns they have, and it's a way also to get our federal elected representatives and senators a little bit more involved in the process of how the state feels about federal issues coming down.
Okay, now this would be whether it's a federal policy, an executive order, obviously legislation.
Anything. That's correct. That's correct. It could be anything. I've even have decided, along with the other members of the committee, that if it's a major federal initiative, such as, you know, health care law is already law, but had we had this committee 2 years ago, 3 years ago, perhaps we would have looked at it before it would have become law, understood more about it, and been able to send those findings on to our federal legislators and other state legislators and citizens.
Okay.
Prior to becoming the law.
Right. Yeah. Instead of after the fact having to deal with them. 718-305-7176 is the number if you're interested in joining the conversation. We're on the line with Representative Judd Matheny, and we are talking about the Balance of Powers Committee. I understand that's not the proper technical name, but that's a little easier for me to say over the air. Another question for you, and you kind of got into it a little bit, but give some other examples of, you know, the type of issues that could be brought before this committee.
Okay, well, we're looking at cost shifting issues right now. That's kind of where I'm focused. I've determined we're gonna launch the committee not all guns blazing. We want to pick a couple of issues that think we can make a difference in quickly, either with action by our federal legislators next year or by us in the General Assembly next year. And we think some cost shifting issues. This coming up August 21st, we're going to start by looking at federal cost shifting in the refugee resettlement program in Tennessee. And just in a nutshell, that means that we want to make sure that when the federal government hosts or enters into contracts with either states or private agencies to bring refugees from another part of the world and settle them in Tennessee, we want to make sure that Tennesseans are not responsible for any of those direct costs at all, or even indirect, like some temporary assistance might be. And we believe, due to some hearings on some legislation this past year, that these individuals are getting on TennCare rather quickly. They're getting temporary assistance for needy families, which is called TANF. It's a benefit in Tennessee, a cash benefit. We do have some evidence that English language learners are needed, in addition, more English language learners are needed in schools to help these people learn English or to function basically within a public environment. We want to make sure none of those costs are being borne by Tennesseans, and if they are, we want to highlight those costs so people can make their own decisions. Well, and that's one cost-shifting thing. In the future, we're perhaps going to look at electronic medical records and what the federal government is requiring of rural hospitals and even some of our larger hospitals with regards to transferring over. We understand that there's software developed here in this country that other countries are using that isn't costing them near as much money as software that we have to use is costing our medical professions. And we think it's unnecessary mandates from the federal government that we're having to pay in higher insurance premiums and less. It takes away from the base of our medical care. We want to look at more ways that we can influence federal opinion and federal action by setting some precedents here in the state and objecting to some things before they actually are able to get so ingrained in our society that we can't reverse them. And so we're going to look at a long list of things. My number one goal was to make sure that on the face it appears to violate the 10th Amendment or it appears to violate the rights and liberties of just individual citizens of Tennessee, or that it's just totally unnecessary. And then we want to dig into that deeper, and, of course, we want it to be done publicly.
Yeah. Well, just under the category of cost shifting, I mean, that's a pretty long list right there. We got to take a quick break, and when we do, we're going to take a caller. The leftist media would like conservatives like us to think we're just a few lonely voices in the wilderness. But don't be fooled. Americans identify themselves as conservatives outnumber liberals by 2-1, according to numerous polls, even by liberals. If you respect traditional American values, there's a place for you to call home on the Internet. It's traditionalamericanmovement.com, or TRADAM, as we call our home. TraditionalAmericanMovement.com is the place where real conservatives can meet up without turf wars and find out what's new in the conservative community. Join up, find out what's happening, and be part of the conservative revolution, all on TraditionalAmericanMovement.com. That's www.TraditionalAmericanMovement.com. I hope to see you there soon. TradAm is a liberal-free website, which makes it a great website. We're going to go to a caller now. Hello, caller. Who do we have on the line? Hello? All right. We'll try them again later.
No, Dave, that happened to me earlier. That happened to me earlier today. I was calling into a radio show, and my cell signal wouldn't come in right. It's very frustrating.
Oh, yeah, it is. 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. And we are talking to Representative Judd Matheny about the Balance of Powers Committee. What are the similarities and differences between this committee and other committees?
Well, the similarities are that just, for instance, in government operations, it's a pretty large committee. I chair the government operations in the House, Senator Mike Bell in the Senate, and then each committee has three or four subcommittees. And that's... The House has 13 standing committees, and then they have subcommittees under them. And each one is tasked with looking at a particular piece of legislation or a particular issue within state government. So they all have X numbers of members, and they're usually pretty close from a partisan divide. They're pretty diverse with regards to the makeup of them. And so the Joint Legislative Oversight Committee, i.e., or a.k.a. Balance of Powers Committee, is made up just as any other committee. We have, although we're a joint committee, instead of being exclusively for the House or exclusively for the Senate, we are a House and Senate combined committee. But we do the same basic function that a normal committee would do. Our subject matter is just going to be a bit different. The reason we fought for the formation of this committee is because there really is not another committee that is tooled up properly, either from a personnel standpoint or from a subject matter standpoint in the state of Tennessee, to specifically look at the impact of federal issues on the lives of everyday Tennesseans and try to determine if it's an overreach of federal power or not. So it is very difficult. Tangents of different subjects we look at can be heard in the various committees, but we had a very difficult time the last couple of years getting states' rights legislation through the state house, just due to the fact that we don't think, A, we had in committees that were properly educated on what exactly the power that the state legislators have, which is enormous, which is another thing we want to do with our new committee, is use that as a platform to educate individual state legislators just how much power they have. But one thing we do not have in our new subcommittee is any true binding power. Many of the GovOps committees don't have a lot of binding power. They're more regulatory and review committees, make positive and negative recommendations on rule reviews, and probably our most important function is to renew agencies within state government when they expire, which is every 2 to 8 years, depending on how they're set up initially. And we look at audits that are coming out of the state comptroller's office. And of course, we're able to subpoena individuals and investigate those audits and before we renew a particular agency's charter, so to speak. The new subcommittee is really it's kind of a freestyle committee. I've struggled over the last couple months just determining exactly how I'm going to put it together, because we're not necessarily looking at House Bill 1167 and Senate Bill 1912. We're more looking at a broad array of ideas, or perhaps a number of executive orders that deal with one issue, or entire federal law that impacts 15 different areas of state government. So it takes a lot of preparation, whereas I would normally spend a week or two preparing to present a bill to a committee, I'm spending about 6 weeks preparing on cost-shifting issues in order to run this committee right. Now, the chairman doesn't have to know everything, which is a good thing, but I do need to know enough to be able to run the meeting fairly and keep us on the direction of where we're headed with the meeting, which is federal cost-shifting of the refugee resettlement plan. We're not going to be there to talk about immigration necessarily in Tennessee, to talk about Islam, to talk about the actual program itself and the makeup of the program. Those things will come up, but if we get too far from the point, my job as chairman is to get us back on point, to keep order throughout the meeting. Now, in a normal committee, we would vote up or down on a bill, and then it would move on to another committee and sort of advance through the process until it was amended and made it to a House floor vote, or until it was killed in a committee. We will, in turn, be making recommendations to other committees and leadership in the General Assembly, and also telegraph or transferring that information to our federal leaders also. So if we determine within the course of a hearing that we believe there is some unfair cost shifting in a particular area, say on August the 21st, then we'll prepare statements and make them public, and also send them to the other representatives and senators in the House and or in Tennessee. We'll also send those to our 9 congressmen and our 2 U.S. senators, and want there to be no mistaking about some of the things that we have found. If we don't find anything of great concern, we may still issue some kind of report, but we may not decide to disseminate it so far because it may not be necessary. So I think we have a lot of power of authorship of what we hear, how we hear it, and then what we do with that information. And my goal is to make sure that we do it efficiently and responsibly.
Well, it sounds like you're going to have your hands full. I've got a real quick announcement, and then we're going to take some more calls. Conservative Nation Radio is fully optimized for smartphones such as the Android, iPhones, and others, so you can download your podcast or listen to us live wherever you are and whenever you want. Same great shows, same great people, now fully optimized for your smartphone. Conservative Nation Radio, where America always wins. And let's try this caller again. Caller, are you with us? Hello? Okay. We'll try another one here. Who do I have on the line here? Hello? Caller? All right. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
You have a question?
My name is Jim Crumling. I'm the president of the Acadiana Patriots here in Louisiana. And we were able to get a resolution for the balance of powers in their session this time. Due to some other things, we had to do some damage control. And what we're working on now, we're working with two gentlemen named A.G. Crow and Albert Gilrey. You might have heard of Albert Gilrey a YouTube thing. But those two guys have been able to accomplish the fact that we have a resolution. My question for Mr. Vance is how did y'all get this through the Tennessee legislation?
Well, I think your question is for Representative Matheny.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'll be glad to answer that, and we're glad to have you tuning in from Louisiana. You say you're from Louisiana.
Yes, sir.
Well, and terrific. And by the way, Dave has my numbers if you want to contact him later. I would love to talk to your legislators in Louisiana and if they're not listening tonight, and also let them know what we did. But we started out in Tennessee with a sort of a boilerplate balance of powers bill. And my understanding was there were numerous states, and it's probably not unlike the one that Louisiana was pushing. And the bill in its original form gave a whole lot of teeth to the committee with regards to what they could look at, subpoena powers, and what that could actually potentially overturn some legislation that was coming down out of the federal level, at least on the state level. And, of course, we just don't have enough educated people in the Tennessee General Assembly to truly understand how much power states have any longer. There's been the Supremacy Clause and the Commerce Clauses and other things that have, and Supreme Court decisions over the last 70, 80 years that have just muddied the water so badly that I can't prove this, but I think a lot of attorneys that are coming out these days and graduating are not learning baseline constitutional law from our Constitution. They're learning it solely from precedent and the morphing, metamorphosis attitude of it. But anyway,
they're learning case law, and they come from the standpoint of the Supremacy Clause, and that's all they seem to learn.
That's right. Excellent point. So we ran this bill as a normal bill, and I actually got it through a subcommittee, and then we realized it was going to meet the fate of all other states' rights bills simply because the wherewithal was not in the General Assembly to pass this. And many legislators asked me, you know, why are you even going to do this? Is this not the job of our federal legislators? Well, my answer is our job is to defend the 10th Amendment and states' rights. So, yes, it's part of our job. And number two, there are federal legislators looking at everything the states do and penalize them for doing it, whether there are self-defense laws, handgun carry permit laws, a lack of seatbelt laws, and a lack of the strictest DUI laws in the country, those types of things. So what's fair is fair. If the federal government's going to look at everything we're going to do and make decisions based on that, we're going to do that with them also, and I think that's part of the checks and balances. I was able to generate enough support within the General Assembly to say, look, this is a good idea. Let's do something with it. So my Senate sponsor was Senator May Beavers in Tennessee, and she and I went to the Lieutenant Governor and the Speaker of the House and said, look, let us, the last thing we want to do is increase the size of government, but we need to talk about forming a new committee that can look at these subjects and look at these subjects only. And they absolutely were in favor of doing this if we could put it together where we weren't costing the taxpayer any additional money. That was the key. So I thought the best place to park this committee was in the Government Operations Committee because we meet year-round, literally every month. So I thought we'll just create this new subcommittee as a subcommittee of the Government Operations Committee, and it will meet on the same day as the Government Operations Committee meets, and it will be comprised of individuals that are within government operations. There's about probably 25 people between the House and the Senate on the Government Operations Main Committee. So we were able to find 10 individuals that really were passionate about this issue and put them on the subcommittee, and with no additional cost to the taxpayer, because these individuals would be in their offices with their staff mobilized anyway. So the price tag is zero, but the cause is quite noble, and I think we were able to sell that properly to our leadership. They had a certain amount of trust in myself and Senator Beavers to know that we were going to be methodical and responsible as we walked into this, and we would, of course, keep them in the loop, and we do. We respect the position of our Lieutenant Governor and our Speaker of the House and don't want them to be surprised by anything. But at the same time, we know some issues have to be heard. And so here we are. We're on the eve of our first meeting on August the 21st, and quite excited about it, and realize that it's not going to be the sexiest of all political talks, but it's going to be one of the most important political meetings, I think, that's been held in Tennessee in quite some time, because it is the genesis for much bigger and better things in the future. We just need to prove ourselves that we're competent and we're capable, and there's a reason for us to exist, and I think we'll move forward. And I would like to encourage other states to, instead of maybe passing a piece of bona fide legislation, to look at a model similar to ours and see if you can set something up that, and ideally, if it doesn't cost the taxpayer any additional money, I think that is really a key to bolstering the committee and its profile. You're not increasing the size of government, you're not costing the taxpayer any more money, but you're performing a critical function with resources that are already at your disposal that are not being properly harnessed.
I would really, we have the two gentlemen that I mentioned are awesome. They just spoke at our last meeting too. And I would definitely probably try to set something up to where they can discuss this issue with you.
Hey, caller, I've got your number. If you'll give me your name, I will make sure that contact is made. And I want to try to get in another caller before we're getting close to a hard break, and I want to go to another caller.
And
what's your first name?
Louisiana, I'll call you back, and I don't mind driving down there to the State House sometime and meeting with the guys. Whatever we need to do, I'll help.
Well, that's awesome. Let me give you a different number, a better number. It's 337.
Okay. All right.
Huh? 337. Okay. 654-2805, and my name is Jim Crumling, Crumling.
Okay, Jim, thank you very much.
Okay. All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye.
All right, we're going to go to another caller, and we'll probably have to come back to them after the break. This is Inside Tennessee. Who do we have on the line here? Hello?
Hello?
Who's calling,
Hello?
Please?
This is Bobby Petrie.
Well, hey, Bobby, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm so
Hello,
glad.
Hello, Bobby.
Hey. I'm so glad that you've got Representative Matheny on your radio program tonight, and I just wanted to add something that I don't think he would say, but it is something that Tennessee needs to be very proud of, and that is that we're the first state in the nation to have such a committee as this. And I think the usefulness of it and the importance of it really cannot be overstated. The value of being able to look at some of these issues and the encroachment of the federal government on states' rights really knows no end, especially in today's political climate.
Amen. Amen, amen.
Nope. No argument there.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate you calling in. I appreciate you listening. And thanks for all you do.
Thanks.
Oh, yes, Bobby does a great job, and she helps me prepare for many, many a difficult task in Tennessee. She's the head of the Tennessee Eagle Forum here. So we sure appreciate her listening.
All right. We're going to have to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. And when we come back, I want to talk about the process. How do you get something to the committee?
Okay. So stay with us. We'll be right back. We're just going to take a short break, and this is Inside Tennessee.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
I'm making beef sliders for my friend Sammy. Nana taught me to always pull meat off the grill early, so it's extra juicy.
Use a food thermometer to ensure ground beef is 160 degrees, or you could make people really sick. Sandy didn't think twice about the slider she ate until yoga class, when a nasty case of food poisoning turned her downward-facing dog into upward-moving lunch. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov and learn the steps Maria unwittingly leaves out. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hey, Dave.
Judd, are you with us? Hello? Hey, Kurt, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, Dave.
Okay, we had a little break in contact there.
You got a computer problem?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. Judd, are you back on the line with us?
I'm back on the line, yes, sir.
All right, sorry about that. Okay,
right.
What is the process for getting something in front of the committee?
So right now the process is I would like the issue to be brought to me officially by a state legislator. A House member or senator or citizen can bring it to me. You can do it through your legislator or you can bring it to me personally. You don't have to be my constituent. But anybody that's discovered an issue out there can send it to me at the State House via email, fax it to me up there. I'm easy to find. My email is rep.judd.mathen@capital.tn.gov. And, Dave, you may want to put that on your website at some time or feel free to pass that on, but you may call me at my office, area code 615-741-7448, I just ask that you put together all the supporting evidence that you can about your, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be a so-called federal case, you know, preparation to bring it to me, but have enough evidence to get our interest, to let us know that there is an overreach of power here, or that the federal government has promised us something, but they're not delivering it, and we're the ones paying for it. The more current the issue, of course, the better. There's so much in the background that's happened in the last year that we could never just go back and start attacking those issues. So we're going to try to stay as current as possible and try to clear up some of the clutter in front of us before we start looking at what's behind us. And once again, it won't take long to really get our sea legs and to build confidence in this committee where we start taking on some bigger tasks and can even perhaps ask for some additional resources. So right now, any way you can get it to me personally or through your legislator is just fine.
And we'll make sure we'll get that out there. And now, how often is the committee going to meet?
Right now, the committee is scheduled to meet every quarter, four times a year. And but if needed, we're fully ready to meet monthly. And just want to get a couple meetings under our belt, make sure we have our processes in place, make sure we know how to become effective in this brand-new area. And I think we will. We've got a lot of smart people, and there's a lot of smart people listening that will have good ideas for us that I'm totally willing to listen to and integrate into what we're doing. I don't think it's unrealistic that at some point we may go monthly once we really define ourselves.
Yeah, get the kinks worked out and figure out the process.
Right, but right now we could go monthly and still not cost the taxpayer anything additional to what they're already paying.
Yeah, don't want to have to spend money to claim you're saving it. I'm going to try another caller here, see if we can get them. Caller, are you with us?
I am.
You have a question?
Yes, this is Claire Crouch. Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Claire Crouch.
I'm doing great.
In East Tennessee?
Everything is wonderful here in East Tennessee. Thank you so much. It actually didn't rain today. We're very happy. Listen, I want to, first of all, thank you so much for having the call. And I want to echo what Bobby Petray said. I just want to amen that. I am so proud of the work you and Senator Beavers have done. And I'm so excited about this committee. And I didn't, the truth of the matter is you basically answered my question, which was, how can I get something to you for your consideration? So,
you just bring it right to me all the time, Claire. I love to see you. So
I love to see you. I appreciate you so much. And let me ask you, I do have one nuance of a question. May I bring something to you when I think the federal government is overreaching, when at the same time I know that it's being studied by other committees? For example,
yes, ma'am.
I'm concerned about the federal overreach in the Common Core situation. Is that something that would be brought to you, or is that something that would go through the education committees first?
Well, I would like to go ahead and bring it to me, and it's something I would take simultaneously to both committees.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've done is, by far probably the most requests that we've received with this new committee is to look at Common Core. The second most requests are immigration and refugee resettlement issues, the cost shifting especially. Senator Dolores Gresham is holding 2 days in September on the 19th and 20th, 2 days of hearings on Common Core. And so I have deferred to our next meeting of the Joint Oversight Committee to talk about Common Core and let her vet Common Core out as much as she possibly can. And then whatever issues remain that conservatives are concerned about or Tennesseans, period, are concerned about, my committee would be more than happy to look at those. And it's not that we don't want to do it. We just don't want to be so redundant when we could look at two issues in great detail. I'd rather do that instead of just one. And I'm confident that Senator Gresham is going to be very thorough and present and allow both sides of the Common Core issue to be presented thoroughly.
I completely understand that. That's what I wondered. I completely understand. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much. And
you
thank
bet.
You
thank
for
you.
The bill. I appreciate it very much. Y'all have a good evening. I'll stay on. Good evening.
Thank you, Claire.
You too.
Good to hear from you.
You too.
Judd, if you decide some sort of action needs to be taken, I think you pretty much already covered this, you would refer it to the appropriate committee. Is that the way it works?
Well, if the appropriate committee had already looked at it, then we may go ahead and look at it. If they have not yet, but we know it's something that's going to have so much interest that they're destined to look at it, we may try to ask them to expedite a hearing because it's something that needs to be looked at. Or a regular committee, we may have to separate an issue, and the regular committee look at a portion of it, and we look at another portion of it. You know, I could say, you know, on the Common Core, it could be feasible for the Education Committee to look at the curriculum and the implementation and the costs, but it could be totally worthwhile for our committee to look at whether or not it's an overreach of federal powers to even be involved in that. And then, you know, merge the two opinions from the two committees together and let the General Assembly and the citizens make a choice. So I think it's a cooperative relationship all the way around. Once again, this committee was set up to look at things that the current General Assembly is not properly tooled to do. The current General Assembly is quite well tooled up to look at conventional education issues, conventional transportation issues, et cetera. But when you have an issue that has as many parts and pieces as Common Core does, or potentially does as we learn more about it, then there could definitely be areas where other committees need to look at it. So
okay.
I'm not real, there won't be a hard and fast rule in my mind. I want to be courteous to other committee chairmen and members, make sure that they know ahead of time that we're going to be looking at something that could perhaps fall or overlap within their bailiwick. But if I think something is almost exclusively in their territory, I'll probably stay away from it unless there's just a part of it that can't be solved in the other committees or is not being solved. Then we're going to look at it.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back. Our friendly local Republican spokesman, Duke Brooks, calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? Get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hangar flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central on Conservative Nation Radio, where America always wins. Now, you did originally have some legislation proposed, and there's, I think, been legislation proposed in other states, don't know the status, but how is what you ended up with different than what was proposed in the legislation?
Well, what was proposed in the original legislation would have given extraordinary power to a committee to actually basically nullify or defund federal initiatives or to sever the state's relationship with federal programs if we determine that it's an overreach of federal power. And, of course, we need a committee like that, but that was a little bit too much power for some members of the General Assembly, some members in leadership and the executive to turn over. And a lot of it comes from ignorance. I think some of it comes from a lack of wanting to put our federal representatives or senators in a tight situation, making them answer tough questions for things that they've done. And these are just rumors that I've heard and things I've heard from individuals that I've spoken to of why the bill wasn't going to pass. Of course, the bill is not intended to embarrass federal legislators. It's not intended to pick fights with anyone. It's simply intended to make sure that our citizens are receiving 100% of the protections that they're guaranteed in the Constitution, period. That's all it's supposed to do, and I feel like we have the authority and we have the fiduciary responsibility as state legislators to protect the rights of Tennesseans. And the federal government is not the first line of defense for our citizens. It's the state legislature. And the more power you have, the more power we exercise, the more we enable our citizens to be free in their daily operations and their daily lives, then the more successful our state's going to be. So
definitely.
Ultimately, we want a committee that's going to have more binding power and authority, and I think the General Assembly can create an environment where there can be a full-time standing committee that can give a yay or nay vote on whether or not an issue should be handled by the state, the federal government, or the private sector. And, of course, my opinion has always been if the private sector can and will do something, they need to be enabled to do it, and that's as far as the government needs to go. And, you know, the federal government, I don't think they believe that the average American has enough education or has enough strategic or even tactical ability to think to take care of themselves, and that's just wrong. That there are so many good Tennesseans just in my – there's enough good Tennesseans in my district to run the whole country, just in my one legislative district of 60,000 people. So there's plenty of folks out there that need protecting and voices that need to be heard and can be heard. And so this committee begins that process for us.
Well, it's something that I'm glad to see happen, and I wish it would have happened sooner, but we'll make the best of, you know, now that we've got it going. We're going to take a real quick break. When we come back, we're going to take a caller, and I got a few more questions I want to try to get in before our time is up. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176 if you want to join the conversation. We're talking with Representative Judd Matheny, and we're talking about the Balance of Powers Committee. We're going to take a call real quick, and this is Kurt on the line. Kurt, do you have a question or comment?
Kind of, sort of, real quickly, thank you, Representative Matheny, for being with us. This may be something that will be so far outside, and I think this is a simple yes or no answer. This issue of eminent domain, something that's a bridge too far to be looking at through where we have to start from with this committee at this point in time.
I don't know if I can give you a yes or no answer. I will tell you I'll be glad to sit down and look at the specific issue. There's a lot of eminent domain issues being discussed in the General Assembly right now, and I'm just not an expert enough on first blush to tell you how the federal government and our state government would interact with too many eminent domain issues. Now, if we want to talk about some things I know through PVA, especially with regards to seizure of land in Tennessee and non-completion of projects and things of that nature, then I would say yes, conventional, typical eminent domain issues that I know about would work, but I'm going to say yes, I guess, after saying that this is something that could be within the bailiwick of this committee. Eminent domain needs to be curtailed, and people need to be compensated better for their properties, and when the federal government takes something by eminent domain or any government and they do not do with it with the intended intended purpose was, then I think whoever they took it from needs to have first option to get it back at what they were paid for it. And so I think there's just a, instead of the government keeping it on the, taking it off the property tax rolls and just lock, putting gates around it and keeping people out of it. So as far as those issues are concerned, quick example, TVA just banned horseback riding around one of the large lakes here in Middle Tennessee that they've allowed for 40 years, and they did it without a public hearing. And that's not necessarily eminent domain, but in a way it is. It's keeping people off of public lands and further restricting their rights to use those, and that's something that this committee might look at in the future. So I think it's a good question. I know I gave you a long answer.
So that's okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Kurt. Now, you mentioned that this is not a permanent committee. It could be disbanded. Is that, am I correct on that?
Well, any committee can be disbanded. Any committee. This committee is as legitimate as any other committee or subcommittee that we have in the House. But it's not in statute. I would like to see a committee like this put in legislative statute that and this is what we work for in the future. This isn't what we all go for at the very first meeting. But at some point in time, I think every single thing that enters Tennessee government and anything that affects lives of Tennesseans should be run through some type of filter that says whether or not it's constitutional, if it's coming from the federal government, or whether or not it's a state's right, local government's right, et cetera, in order to exercise it. But this committee can be disbanded at the pleasure of the Speaker of the House or the Speaker of the Senate. Because it's a joint committee, either one of them could pull the plug on it should they choose. Now, there's always the possibility if one body does it that the other body will still exist, but then, of course, the strength's cut in half. But I have confidence that our two speakers know the importance of this, know the fact that Tennesseans need this, not just want it, but they need it, and therefore they're going to help us provide it. And I just want to make sure that I do the best job I can in chairing it so that it continues to grow stronger. And the Finance Committee could be disbanded tomorrow without cause. That's the power that the various speakers have.
Okay. I was just, since it wasn't done legislatively, I just wanted to try to get some clarification on that. Now, you mentioned refugee resettlement will probably be on the agenda for the 21st.
It will be on the agenda, yes. The cost shifting, federal cost shifting of our refugee resettlement program will be on the agenda.
And of course, since this is a new committee and, it's a joint committee, you don't know exactly how everything is going to play out. I mean, I guess there's a lot of unknowns in terms of how this thing will actually flow.
Well, I feel confident that all the committee members are on the same sheet of music, and having spoken to all of them, and I think it's going to play out just fine. It's a good bunch of men and women, and and for those listening that, the committee consists of the House members are myself and Representative Josh Evans, Representative John Reagan, Representative Joe Carr, and Representative Mike Turner from Davidson County. And on the Senate, it is Senator Mike Bell is the vice chairman, and Senator Janice Bolin, Senator Farrell Hale, Senator Jim Somerville, and Senator Thelma Harper. So that we have a good group of diverse individuals on there from both parties, and they're all passionate about states' rights issues, and I think that they're going to enjoy this new subject matter. And I'm going to try to make it as productive as possible. And then when we're through making hay, we're going to adjourn the meeting and take a quick lunch break, and then go right back into our normal rule review, which we would have convened for anyway that day.
You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. The phone number is 718-305-7176. This is Dave Vance, your host, and we're speaking to Representative Judd Matheny from Tullahoma. We're talking about the Balance of Powers Committee. What is the key to making this committee function as intended?
I think the key to it is making sure that it receives public support more than anything. I would like to see as many people come on our first day to understand more about what we're going to do on August the 21st, and on all of our committees, and follow the process of the committee. You'll be able to watch it live online if you can't be there that day. But, you know, talk to your individual legislator about what you saw at the committee. If you see an injustice that we've highlighted, if you see something that's blatantly unconstitutional that we've highlighted, something that is just best left to the citizens of the state of Tennessee to decide, make sure you tell your legislator, look, I was watching this committee and this was brought to my attention and we need to change this. My understanding is it takes a piece of legislation to do it, or it takes an executive order from the governor, or it takes some executive action by the governor with the federal administration to put input into it. I think we can get as much out of it as we choose to get out of it. Now, also, we're inviting our federal representatives and their staff members to attend, and I don't expect the members to come. That's too much to ask, and understandably so for this small event. At some point in the future, we think they need to come before the General Assembly. But I do think their staff members should come at least to this first one, and then after that, maybe if they need to watch it remotely, they can. But they need to understand what it is that we're getting at and how we're getting at it, and so they better understand some of the frustrations that we feel.
Now, have they agreed to have their staff there, any of them from our federal delegation?
I have not received any RSVPs yet, but I'll stay on them, and I'm confident some will.
Well, some of them talk a good game of limited government and states' rights. I guess we'll see where they actually stand on it. Now, the first one on the 21st is at 9 o'clock, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and do we know the room yet?
No, and more than likely it's going to be in one of the three smaller hearing rooms, 29, 30, or 31, which will mean seating will be limited. But if we receive enough interest ahead of time, we can possibly move it to room 16, which is the large hearing room. But no matter what, anybody that's ever been to the Capitol, or if you haven't, it's going to be in the War Memorial Building, Legislative Plaza right next to the War Memorial Building, and it will be in one of the main hearing rooms. Anyone can call my office, once again, area code 615-741-7448, and even as late as August the 20th, or the morning of the 21st, and we'll give you the latest information. When you come into the Capitol, it will be very easy to find, and we'll have folks to help you get there if you need that. Just let us know ahead of time.
Okay, so if you start getting a lot of calls, if you and the other members of the committee start getting a lot of calls, then that might be enough justification ahead of time to say, look, we're going to move this to room 16 or one of the other bigger rooms?
Sure it would.
Okay, sure it would. Great. Well, that sounds like a mission there.
We encourage that. I would encourage that in any committee, Dave, not just this one, but especially this one, because we're so passionate about states' rights. But, man, any interest that anybody has on any committee, contact your state legislator and let them know you're coming to committee, or let them know you're watching what's going on in the committee process, and hold these guys accountable, not only for the votes that they cast, but also for the people that they support in other offices. They need, if somebody's going to support, get down here and vote conservative, but they're going to support a moderate, you need to consider that a moderate position in their portfolio. It's just as important who your elected representatives support in other offices as it is how they cast their votes. And that's kind of my tagline for the end here.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier that a lot of them don't seem to know what power the state legislature has. This will be one of those things that educates them on that. And maybe it's not a matter of they were afraid to or didn't want to. Maybe in some cases it's just an issue of they didn't know, which is sad that an elected official wouldn't know, but that's where we're at.
Well, this is all around, I think this is a good opportunity for everybody involved. It's healthy for the federal government to make sure that they make the right decisions that best affect its citizens. It's healthy for Tennesseans because it begins to correct some of the begins to address and correct some of the overreaches that have been coming to our state that have been so frustrating. And it's a beachhead. It's the first step of many, but it's a beachhead, and we're proud of it.
Yeah. Well, Representative Vinny, I appreciate you coming on the show. We appreciate what you do. I'm glad that you are the chair of this committee, and we will do everything we can to get people up there. Once again, thanks for coming on. Love to have you back. Maybe after the first meeting, we can have you back and talk about that a little bit. Once again, appreciate you coming on and appreciate all you do. We'll be right
appreciate
back in just a minute.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judd. We appreciate you. Take care.
Take care.
Don't go away. We'll be right back in a minute. Take a quick break, and we're going to have Kyle Mallory with us. We're going to talk about Department of Children's Services and Common Core here in Tennessee. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top of that thing.
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Visit our website at www.tn4action.com. The phone number is 718-305-7176 if you want to join the conversation. Our next guest is Kyle Mallory. He's a former member of the Tennessee Department of Children's Services. He's currently a teacher. He's been involved with child services. Currently the chairman of Stewart County Foster Care Review Board. So he's been around kids in one capacity or another for most of his adult life, whether teaching, the foster care, children's services in Tennessee, and he's very active in the GOP here in Stewart County. Kyle, you with us?
Yes, I am. Do you hear me?
Yep, I got you.
Appreciate how you doing,
you coming
Dave?
On.
Thank you.
Pretty good.
Thank
pretty
you
good.
For
thanks for being with us. Let's get right to this. Now, you know, you've been doing the GOP thing for quite a while. You've been involved. Your dad was a county chair. You're a county chair. Last year, there were some resolutions that were passed in Tennessee. Matter of fact, you were the first county chair to initiate one of those resolutions. So before we get to the DCS stuff, you care to talk about that one just a little bit?
No, I'll mention a little bit. Initially, Stewart County and Carroll County basically signed resolutions that were very similar. And I'll get to the meat of those in a minute. And then behind us, three other counties, smaller counties, joined us. And we had five counties, and it still wasn't enough, most of us thought, to really catch any attention. So,
and what were the resolutions on?
Basically, the resolutions, we were very critical of our current governor, Governor Haslam, and his appointment process, and basically appointing conservatives or just Republicans to executive service positions. And there was, no, the resolutions themselves had lots of different bullet points, from DCS deployments to economic development, to the THP.
Basically, the Samar Ali appointment you're referencing there, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct. And that was one of the ones that would seem like the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back among many of the GOP chairs. But I guess let me just start out before those five counties had done resolutions. We had there were 16 chairs that sent a letter to the governor saying, "Hey, you've got a problem with appointments." And well, there was
that was
no
a year prior, correct? That was in 11. That was in 2011.
That's correct. That's correct. So a year prior to our resolutions, we had 16 chairs and county chairs sent a letter basically to the governor saying, "Hey, there's an appointment problem. You've got too many Democrats, and not just Democrats, but far left Democrats in executive service positions." And for your listeners, the difference is the executive service positions serve at the pleasure of the governor or his appointee, like a commissioner, who are also commissioners, obviously, executive service positions as well. And we didn't get any response. There was a claim there's communication problems. So we sent nonetheless, we didn't get an answer. And we had sent many, not just this letter, but we had sent numerous, "Hey, there's a problem through various means.
Channels, back channels.
Yeah, back channels. And we tried to keep this, you know, out of the press. And then with the appointment of Samir, that was one of the the straw that broke the camel's back, and many of us chairs were just furious after this appointment. And another quote that was in the Tennessean just prior to that is that the governor was bragging about keeping on 85% of the Bredesen appointees. And those two facts together coming back to back, this was very problematic to many chairs. And then the five county funds, fine. We'll send a resolution out and make this a little more public." And the five counties, it wasn't enough, and the various chairs got together and said, "Well, if we want one county, if we could have one county to join us, Williamson County would be the one to get." And made contacts with Kevin Kukagee, who was chair at that point in time, and we discussed the problems, and he agreed to back us. And they filed a resolution and passed a resolution as well. And by the time it was all over, probably around 15 to 16 counties had signed some type of resolution, and about five or six more had done other backdoor channels. They didn't want to go public like we did, but and there you go. And again, it was.
They did make contact. They just didn't do it publicly.
That's correct. Complaining.
Right.
So that happened. There were some meetings. Has there been any significant change? Well, some. There was a new commissioner of DCS was hired, Jim Henry, who is a Republican. But there hasn't been the significant change that many of us wanted.
But not just DCS, but a lot of different across the board. You either have a lot of Bredesen appointees still there, and some of the appointees that the governor's made haven't been so great as far as that goes. But
that's correct. I mean,
and you've been pretty much ignored. A lot of the chairs have been ignored from everything that I can gather. You had 16. Yeah, it's only 16 out of 95, but it's 16 out of 95, and one of those is Williamson County, has issues. You know, you got a problem there. You might want to pay a little attention to what's going on. For the most part, they ignored it. But I want to go ahead and you know, we kind of brought that out there. But DCS, that has been one thing, and that's kind of like a bipartisan issue. This, you know, this is, has to do with kids. It's not Republican. It's not Democrat. Matter of fact, the person that was appointed initially under Governor Haslam was a Republican. But what is going on in DCS and why? What's the problem? What's the root of the problem and why? And this, you know, you're speaking from experience on this. You used to work there. You still keep abreast of what's going on. You're involved with the foster care issue here in the county. And so you see a lot of the impacts of the problems in DCS. What's going on in your opinion?
Well, this is, again, I need to probably give some historical background to this, is that DCS was a new department under the Sundquist administration many years ago. And they put five, basically, departments under one roof and made a bigger department. It was not very successful. There was some good things, but it wasn't totally fixed. Then under the Bredesen administration, it sunk. Bredesen hired a former commissioner out of Kentucky, and she brought a lot of her people with her. And her nickname was she had several nicknames. One of them was the Viatola, and also Granny Clampett. She got that nickname because of her, basically, demeanor, very authoritative, but irrational as well at times, or at least that was her perception. And so she stayed on. The DCS continued to get in the news, Kids continued to, the system continued to fail for kids. Then we had, and the legislature was just waiting on, I guess, Bredesen to get out to get rid of the Viatola. And so we had Cato Day come in, and here's the root of the problem. Cato Day failed to remove assistant commissioners and deputy commissioners and other executive service employees that had caused the major problems to begin with. They were basically continued to be left in charge of a failed system. And Kate O'Day was basically just a figurehead. She, from all accounts, just let them run the show. And there was
they just
failing.
Told her how things normally went, and she just let them do their own thing? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what. That's no change occurred. No change in philosophy. And that's the key thing with the there's even today, huge philosophical problems with the department and many of their employees. If you're a conservative administration or even a Republican administration, you need to have at least Republicans and conservatives implementing conservative policies. And
I think all conservatives
would
agree with that. Hey, Kyle, I hate to cut you off. I've got to take a quick break, and then we'll come right back to you.
Okay.
Don't let the big liberal media fool you or anyone else. There's no war on women in the conservative movement, and we've got the proof right here every Tuesday night. Women Patriots with Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing comes to you at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, here on Conservative Nation Radio. Listen up, then call in and be heard by real women who are real patriots. Incidentally, conservative guys are welcome at our very own B&B, too. Women Patriots with Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central on Conservative Nation Radio, where America always wins. And back to you, Kyle. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Actually, Kyle, we do have a caller on the line. He's been waiting a few minutes here, and we're going to take a call real quick. Caller, are you with us? Hello? Well, haven't been able to pick that guy up all night, but I thought I'd give him another try. Okay, hey, back to your point about dysfunctional problems there at DCS.
So Cato Day has come in, and she refused to make the changes she needed to. She finally resigned after pressure, and we now have a new commissioner, Jim Henry. He's only been there around 4 months. I think the first 2 to 3 months, he's been there with basically just putting out fires.
And so
it's in reactive mode rather than being able to have, rather than have an opportunity to be proactive.
That's correct. And he has it. So I think the I have a lot of respect for Jim Henry. He was a Republican. Here's one of the things that I have a lot of respect for is that those were Republican back 20 and 30 years ago, when it wasn't cool to be Republican, when you suffered being a Republican in this state, and he was there, and that deserves a lot of kudos for him. And has he started to make some changes? Yes. But the question is, is he going to be allowed to make the changes? I know he needs them. I know he knows he needs to make. Is he going to be allowed? And I'm hoping he will, but we're still out there. But the key thing is, until you have people with a philosophical, at least conservative, or, and I'm not talking about even Democrat, Republicans, I mean this, the philosophically conservative in that department, the kids are going to suffer.
Well, now, I do have to ask this. A lot of the problems we've had, you find out that a kid has died, and we, it's kind of just leaks out a little bit at a time. You know, you hear that there were X number that had died in custody of DCS or under supervision of DCS, and then you hear, well, no, it's this many, and then you find out there's this.
Let me address that one. That's a great question. Is that, of course, there's two problems here. First of all, kids are dying that have DCS involvement with them. I mean, we just had one in Clarksville. It was in the newspaper two or three weeks ago. That was a DCS failure, by all accounts. And it's not just that this kid's dying, is that they couldn't even, under the Kate O'Day administration, couldn't even define what DCS involvement was. So that's the reason that they couldn't give you a number, give the press a number, the Tennessean, is they couldn't even define what involvement was. That's how dysfunctional DCS was. And these, again, Bredis and appointees.
Okay, but I would still think that there's some sort of established system for, okay, when you have X amount of contact with some child in this situation, isn't there a requirement to do a follow-up ever so often? Is that not the procedure?
Well, yeah, there's fault policies, and of course, and here's another thing, is that the press, the Tennessean got it wrong on one thing, is that they kept saying, well, you tell me how many is dead, how many is dead, how many is dead, how many babies do we have dead? But okay, and they could never get an answer, and that was always the story. But the problem was, is that why are these kids dying? And that's the question that the Tennessean really never grabbed hold of. And again, it's my experience is it's just total philosophical problems, and the way they interpret legislation. We've had several incidents that I've had meetings with in the last 3 or 4 months. Well, the problem is I don't think the interpretation of the law is just wrong.
Let's hold it right there. I'm going to have to hold you up right there. When we come back, we'll talk about that interpreting the law. We've got to take a quick break. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio, and we'll be right back. Please don't go away.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm place on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy
backwash. I want to be a bike that races around the country.
When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny
I grow up,
porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
I want to be
a...
I want to be
a...
I want to be
a...
I want to be
I want to be a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
Blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but mama tried.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is brought to you by Tennessee Action Council, www.tn4action.com. Phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking to Kyle Mallory, and we're talking about the DCS situation here in Tennessee. Kyle, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, and we're talking basically about the differences between how conservatives and liberals basically interpret law. And that, in a nutshell, is the problem, not just with DCS, but but with other departments as well. Is if you're going to hire, if you're going to be a CEO, you need to find people under you that think like you. And if you're a Republican, you need to find people who think like Republicans. Republicans, you know, we're going to disagree. Even hardcore conservative Republicans are going to disagree every now and then. But most of the time, we're going to be on the same page and maybe in the same sentence. And you're not going to get that with liberals. And that is the whole problem with this administration, is that they have kept way too many people on that are not just, I'm not talking about blue dog Democrats, I'm talking about left-wing liberals. And I know several of them personally.
There's left-wing liberals in DCS, and you think that's part of the problem?
That is exactly the problem. Not just one or two, but a number of them, far left.
Wow. And what about other agencies within the state that have Bredesen leftover appointees, or maybe has them appointees who either are Democrat or Republican, but they're still liberal?
Well, you know, using his own numbers is that, you know, you said 85, you kept on 85% of the Bredesen appointees. And that was over the state of Tennessee. I'm familiar with other, you know, some of my West Tennessee friends have been very critical of the leftovers from the THP, the Department of Safety, that they didn't house clean there. You name the department of, I know that the Department of Health has got, I've been told, has got a lot of leftovers. And now the one area that they've done some house cleaning in is the Department of Education, but who they brought in
was that any better?
Pretty questionable. You're not bringing.
Well, wasn't he recommended by Arne Duncan? We're talking Kevin Huffman here, right? Wasn't he recommended by
correct.
Arne Duncan, or is that?
I would assume they're coming in from the American. I can't think of the name of that organization now. It's left me. But Kevin Huffman's old organization. And that's what I've been told. And these are people from out of state, many out of people from out of state, not Tennessee teachers, not folks that understand Tennessee problems, but people from northeastern states. So
how does a red state like Tennessee, and I have had this, you know, we brought this question up on other shows. How do we end up with so many liberal Republicans in Tennessee? I mean, and Haslam's liberal. I don't think anybody would argue that. So we have a liberal governor. We have two liberal senators. Of our state, of our representatives, our U.S. representatives, I'm sorry, nobody really stands out. I mean, you know, you hear Marsha Blackburn, but, you know, I'm sorry. I haven't seen a lot there. And so how do we end up with all these liberal Republicans in what's got to be one of the reddest states in the country?
Well, I'll say this. One of the quotes and one of the explanations that that I heard on the Hand Praying Trail is that this recently this year is that an East Tennessee guy told me there are no Democrats in East Tennessee. You cannot get elected as a Democrat in East Tennessee. So thus, there's almost a one party over there. And if you got one party, then you get that's, I think, how you've gotten a lot more of your moderate Republicans. Your moderate, if you're considering your moderate Republicans, Haslam, Corker, and Alexander, where are they from? East Tennessee. Where are your most Republican vote? Most Republican vote comes from East Tennessee.
And so most of the voters are liberal? Are liberal Republicans? Is it the voters, or is that just the people with money that are able to get the name on the ballot?
I would say that there's a lot of Democrats that are voting in Republican primaries, thus getting your more moderate Republicans elected versus your hardcore constitutional conservatives elected.
Well, but the party allows that. They have open primaries.
That's correct.
Why would any conservative Republican want an open primary?
They wouldn't. The only argument that I have heard, and I've actually done this, is that this would allow Republicans to go in and vote in Democratic primaries to mess with the Democrats. I mean, I remember voting in a Democratic primary just to make sure, hopefully get the wrong person in or the easiest one to get beat. Remember, I did that a couple of times. But for none, I guess, not because I like the guy or a girl or whoever, it's just to...
Thought they were easier to beat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's the argument. I think that at this point in time, I think it's we need to close the primaries.
Before we get too far off track here, I kind of went down this road with you, but before we get too far out, DCS, what needs to happen to fix it? And for the kids, from a perspective of, you know, kids are dying and that shouldn't be happening especially when they're supposedly in state custody. What needs to happen to fix that?
There's about 10 key people that need to be fired yesterday from that department, and Republicans and conservatives need to be hired, especially those who came in with Viola or in head positions with the Viola. I mean, that's clear and simple. You do that right, there's about 10 people, you wipe them out, you send them packing, and put in good conservatives in those positions. That would go a long way, not only just for getting a philosophical change in the department, but for morale of the department. There are good people that are working in that department right now that are just beat down by these ultra left wing loons.
So it's the people, and it's not the fact that they don't have good established policies. They have policies, they just don't follow them, and it's because of the people. Is that what you're telling me?
I would say that's about 85%. Some of the policies need to be changed and revised and looked at. But yes, it's the people. And I don't care, even if you got a bad plan, if you got good people to implement them with the right philosophical mindset, you can make good things happen, but you don't.
Okay.
And what's so sad? I mean, here we're talking about the most vulnerable people or children in this state, and this problem's been going on now for 10 years.
Yeah, it's not a new problem. I mean, to be fair, it did not start with Haslam. I mean, it's been a problem. It's a problem in many states, as far as that goes.
It is. Tennessee's not unique to the children's services. I mean, and to be fair again, is that there are going to be kids that die in this department.
Yeah.
And that is a hard fact to realize. There's going to be even bad decisions made.
Right.
it's just
you don't expect
that
perfection,
of...
but you do. You do expect a decent effort, and you do expect accountability.
And you expect honesty. And some of the things that come out of DCS prior to Jim Henry and especially then the Valtola administration, that's former commissioner under Bredesen, and just darn lies. That's
hey, we're going to have to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Don't go away. This is Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. We'll be right back.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service, 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com. Then click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad you did. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we've been speaking with Kyle Mallory about the mess in DCS. And we're going to hit another topic here in just a second, but I'm going to take a caller real quick. We got Ed Pitts on the line.
I know, Ed.
Can you hear me, Ed?
Hello. Yeah, you got me?
Yep.
We do.
Hello.
Yep. Hey, right. Appreciate you coming
okay,
on.
Okay, yeah. You bet, David. I'm sorry I missed the first part of your show. I couldn't get logged in here in a timely manner. But about child service, they seem to be on top of situations. I've followed them over the years that they didn't really need to be involved in. You know, it could have been handled other ways through families and other avenues. And then they seem to want to load into situations, or they seem to want to ignore, I'm sorry, situations where they should be more involved. And the gentleman is right. There's a real underlying problem there, as there is with many of our state departments. It all stems from the fact that these liberals have been loaded in over the years. And we never had a good house cleaning. And I suggest that that's probably what we need to do.
The virus database has been updated.
All right, there we go. There's my NAS protection there. I believe a good house cleaning is in order. I don't see it happening with Haslam, but. There's another day coming, and perhaps Perhaps we can straighten this out. I am pleased to see it's getting the public attention. Yes.
Yeah. Ed, you're exactly right. Ed, that's exactly what I'm saying, is that liberals have a different way of thinking, and their decision-making skills are flawed. And that's what, and that's the point you just made. So,
flawed is probably I have a couple of years of psychiatry. I was raised in a family of liberals. I've dealt with them all my life.
You went through counseling, right? You're okay now?
Oh, yes, sir. Thank goodness my grandmother actually pulled me out of that mess. But at any rate, liberals, by and large, do have a problem, and it's a logic problem. It stems. It's not all that complicated. It's just let's just call it a mental disorder and let it go at that. What do you say, boys?
There you go.
No argument here, Ed. Appreciate you calling in.
You bet. You still with me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to get back in on the Common Core conversation, Dave, if you could.
Yeah, we're getting ready to start that here in just a second. I was going to take that up. Okay. Let me go to Kurt real quick, and then we'll come back to the Common Core, okay?
Okay.
Kurt, you've been more than patient. If you got something you want to say or a question you want to ask.
Oh, hey, no, listen, Kyle and Ed, you guys are doing a fine job bearing this out. Kyle's talking on a subject there which he knows a whole lot more about than I do. Now, I've got some opinions about some various things that have been spoken here in the last few minutes about what it's going to take to fix some of these situations, but I think those opinions that I would probably be better off to keep them to myself for right now. You get my drift, okay?
Okay, Sergeant Schultz, we got you.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you, Kurt.
I want to get off the DCS thing and just by saying it I don't think the takeoff just a tad bit for Governor Haslam on this issue, not a much, but I don't think he was informed of the problems of DCS when he came into office. And his transition team needs to take more of the blame for these problems, not just with DCS, but with the appointments. Of course, he's the boss, so, I mean, the buck stops with him, but his transition team, they need to be looked at as a bigger problem than, or part of the big problem that's there.
He knew Kate O'Day personally, correct? Didn't he already know her before he appointed her?
Yeah, he knew her. She ran a facility out of Knoxville she'd been in the news as running that facility and had some issues in the news. I don't know how the legitimacy of those news reports or how factual they were, but I don't think Governor Haslam was aware of the problems that DCS really had. And in fact, I'm almost sure he didn't, because I remember when he was running for election, I asked, what about DCS and the problems in DCS? Are you going to clean house? He didn't know about his statement was, well, I didn't know there were problems in DCS. So, and that's when, point in time, I got involved with the election and back Ramsey. So.
Okay. Well, so pretty much we need to put good people there. Hopefully that will happen. Hopefully Jim Henry will clean house, but definitely need to keep an eye on DCS. Now, let's get to Common Core. Now, you're a teacher. You're already going through the mandatory Common Core indoctrination. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that from a teacher's perspective? And then we'll get Ed back on here after you spill a little bit.
The two issues I've been looking at is that the first issue is transparency. And if you're going to go to using what they're calling informational text, that, in turn, doesn't allow transparency of what's being taught in the classroom. And then, I mean, that's the number one issue. And getting into that, some of the resources that teachers are being given have a far left tint to them. And I was
some
going,
or
I think,
most.
Oh,
would it be some or most?
I would say, I'd say 95% have a liberal tint to them. Some have a extremely liberal tint. Some are marginal liberal. But we were given 10 examples, and there were no conservative informational texts in those 10 examples that I went through. There's a couple that were at best, and I even disagree with me, was at least neutral. But I don't even think they were neutral.
Now, these are provided by the State Board of Education, correct? These links that they refer you to?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And
Parents can go on the website there to the State Board of Education and see the links that they're referring the teachers to, correct?
Some. They probably are not going to get some of the examples that we were given and the exact training. But I was in the training and I said, hey, guys, I look at the subject matter of these informational texts we're getting. Example of one was immigration, and one of the first ones there was on Arbor Day, and there's another one of women in the military, and
nothing with a conservative slant.
Not even. Couple with neutral, one might argue neutrality, but nothing of conservative, but plenty of with liberals. Again, I say about 90 to 95% were liberal tints. And the second part of this, you got the transparency and what's being taught, what kind of informational text coming into the classroom. The second part is that if you've got Indiana, Alabama, Oklahoma, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Florida, Utah, even Kentucky, and we're all in some place having to step back and say, ooh, we have some problems with this Common Core.
20-some states, right?
In to what?
20-some states have opted out or are in the process of opting out. Is that accurate?
I've seen that number, at least 10, and probably 20. You can count Tennessee in that and where they're at.
Kyle, I'm gonna have to cut you off here real quick. I've got to do a quick, about a 30-second read, and then I want to get Ed back on the line because we're kind of running low on time here. So if you just bear with me for just a second. Join Delaware political veteran Christopher Manti every Friday right here on Conservative Nation Radio for the Christopher Manti Show at its new time, 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 Central, for a fresh take on conservative thought, modern America, the threat of Sharia, and the weird, wild, wacky world of Washington, D.C., plus some heavy metal rock and roll thrown in for good measure. The Christopher Manti Show, which could readily be called eponymous, Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 Central on Conservative Nation Radio, where America always wins. And let's bring Ed back on and get his comments about Common Core. I know he's got a few. You with us, Ed?
Yes, sir. When it comes to Common Core, I've done quite a bit of research on this. Not only 20 states are considering rejected. We have to understand that a civilized nation on the planet has rejected this. And I've said this to some of our state legislatures, what we're fixing to do is trash out yet another generation or two of children if we pursue this. The curriculum that is being presented is really irrelevant. The testing is what you teach to, and we're not being provided any testing information, and that lends credence to the uh, to what Kyle was talking about when it comes to being a, you know, being able to tell what we're getting into. It's open ended. There's no transparency because of that. We cannot lay our hands on the testing curriculum, and if you're going to pass a course, you have to teach to the testing, and that's a couple of the problems I have with it. Mathematicians have told me that the higher disciplines of math, if you teach the math that they're proposing, the higher disciplines of maths runs aground. You cannot perform at those levels with the math that they're teaching for the basics. So, frankly, I think we're fixing to wreck another generation, maybe two, before we see the errors of our ways if we pursue this, David.
Well, hopefully, we'll wake enough people will wake up soon enough. You know, this is one of those deals where, if I recall correctly, Governor Bredesen signed on, and then of course Governor Haslam has done nothing to slow down the train, and the legislature wasn't involved with this like they should have been. But good points there, Ed. Hopefully we can, you know, maybe this will end up, maybe part of this will end up if Senator Gresham is not able to squash it all in her committee, maybe some of this will end up and the Balance of Powers Committee. I'm going to take another call real quick. We've got a mic on the line here.
Hey, guys.
Hey, how are you? Appreciate you calling in. What's your question?
I actually have a comment, if that's all right. A bit of a question and a comment. I assume you heard about the foreign troops on U.S. soil kind of gig.
I've heard about it, yeah.
Recently, I've just been informed that my unit is going to be deployed up to a station, kind of like a border station between Washington State and Canada.
What's your unit? Who are you with?
I'm with the Royal Dragoons, the British Army.
Okay. Just curious how you heard about us. I'm glad to have you on the line, but...
I was just flicking through the Blog Talk Radio shows, and your show is on the second page, I believe.
Oh, okay, great. So you're going to be stationed. Your unit is going to be sent to somewhere between D.C. and where?
Washington. You know, the state Washington.
Yeah, Washington State, and where?
State. Okay, Washington State and the Canadian border.
Okay. What are you going to be doing there? I mean, this is a little off topic, but since you called.
Oh, apologies. We're training for the United Nations has been on America's case quite recently, and because conservatives, I thought you'd appreciate to know that we'll be training alongside Russian and American troops for gun removal exercises.
Okay. All right.
As you bring up the United Nations, that's another one of those articles that we were required to learn about. One of those articles one of those examples was Beyond Thirst articles on the United Nations Millennium Development Goal. And,
the Agenda 21 stuff, right?
Yeah. Didn't say Agenda 21, but it might as well have.
Mike, are you familiar with Agenda 21?
Pardon?
Are you familiar with Agenda 21?
I'm not familiar with Agenda 21, so I just, you know, take my orders and carry on.
Okay. Now, back up again. You said you're training with Russian and American troops, and what's the mission you're training for again?
Effectively, in layman's terms, I'm sure on the official documents it's going to have a lot of different things. But in layman's terms, gun removal from citizens.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Personally, I don't think, you know, personally, I would be happy to do it in my own country because it's not you guys have a constitutional right to have a gun. So I don't feel too happy about taking... I mean, it's not my country, sure, but I don't feel too happy about taking away someone else's constitutional right.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I imagine Lee Rigby, I think that's the guy's name, who had his head chopped off over in England right outside of his base. He probably could have used a gun.
Yeah, I mean, I signed up for a petition, actually, the sponsor of a bunch of us signing petitions to try and see if active servicemen can carry guns, because this is insane.
Well, what about your average citizen? I mean, you know, you wouldn't want them, I mean, because you have these radical, the Muslims, from everything I can read, have taken over control of a great part of your country. Is that accurate or not?
That is entirely accurate. I, as a British citizen, and more importantly, as a British soldier as well, I feel incredibly scared to go into some parts of London, which is our capital city, because it is entirely overrun by extremists.
Okay, so shouldn't the average person be able to have a gun to protect themselves from these extremists? Since I understand your government's responsible for a lot of that, just like our government over here plays footsies with the Muslim Brotherhood and other groups. But, you know, average people have a right to defend themselves too, wouldn't you think?
Oh, yeah, I entirely suppose so. I mean, if there was a petition to give the average citizen a gun as well, I would apply for that as well. But at the moment, it seems to only be active servicemen.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, I guess that's a start. All right, so you guys are training for gun confiscation.
It sounds insane, doesn't it?
Is that what you took your oath? Is that going to be worth your oath for you, do you think?
I have the right to denial. My regiment in my regiment's history, I have the right to denial of certain orders, which I believe to be in breach of... effectively in breach of what I as a person believe in, something which was around since the Napoleonic War. So technically I could overrule my oath to follow orders using a right of denial, which is probably, if it does actually happen, probably something I will end up doing.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. So you're training with U.S. and Russian troops in Washington State. I mean, you know, I don't know what to say. Nothing shocks me anymore. It doesn't shock me anymore. It just doesn't. Hopefully that's not something that'll come to pass, but I can tell you that a lot of us are really thinking about that as a possibility. Hey, I'm going to have to take a quick break. I've got a caller on the line. It's got a little information for us. So if you guys will hold on, we'll get her on, and we'll do a little live ad here, and we'll get right back to the conversation.
Yeah, no worries.
Barbara, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good. It's been an interesting show you've got going on here.
Well, thank you.
And
I went from Common Core to gun confiscation, but hey, you know,
yeah,
you got to be ready for all of it.
You never know.
Hey,
yeah,
I may sound like I'm blowing this off, but I'm really not. Nothing would shock me anymore in this country. Nothing.
Oh, I know. I hear you. Just, yeah. Anyway, actually, tomorrow, I don't know how aware everybody is, but there's overpasses for Obama's impeachment is going on all over the U.S. tomorrow. So if you're... See people waving and showing signs when you're driving to work. Don't forget to beep and hoot and holler. And if you're not working and you see one, go ahead and jump in and do some protesting, because that's what I'm doing at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. I'm really excited. And then I'm going to have some people from there give us a call and share their experiences with us, because this is... you know, like I said, it's all over the United States that this is going on, and it's starting tomorrow. And it's been going on little by little, but they're calling tomorrow the wave. So between 7 and 9 a.m. and then from 5 to 7 p.m. Local time. And if you can go to overpasses to impeached or for impeached. Wait, I'll try that again. Overpasses for Obama's impeachment, and you could find your state and see what they're doing.
Sounds great. I've gotten some emails on that. And so you're going to have, that's going to be the topic of your show tomorrow night then, correct?
Yes, yes. So,
and that's
I'm really
from
excited.
7 to 9? What time is your show again tomorrow night?
8 to 10 Eastern Time, 7 to 9 Central Time. So join in and we'll let you know what's going on.
And that's
how
Barbara
it's been
from
handled
Women Patriots.
Too. That's me. Thanks.
Hey, thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. We'll talk to you later.
All righty.
I know Dave, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm going to go ahead and open up a couple of mics here. We've got Mike Davis with us from the British Army. Ed, are you with us?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Hello?
I'm still with you, Dave. Yeah, hello,
okay.
Dave. Yeah, I'm here.
All righty. Hey, we're going to come back to the gun confiscation issue here in just a second. Last word on Common Core, because we've only got about 5 minutes left here. Kyle?
I
do have a question for you.
Go ahead with the question.
I do have a quick question on that. Do the other teachers not realize what's going on?
You know, when I expressed this concern in the training, they said, oh, yeah. But most teachers, I mean, are not political scientists. They're not politically savvy. They don't, you know, one article is not catching their attention. But if you're not politically savvy and you don't understand politics and don't understand what the Obama administration is trying to do, you're not going to realize it. And, I mean, you can't blame the teachers for this issue, or even their administration, because, again, they're English teachers. They're science teachers. They're not political scientists. They're not legislators. They're counting on basically our executive service folks and the Department of Education to make these decisions, and they've been taught at
liberal universities, so they never really learned how to think for themselves anyway, for the most part, right? With few exceptions.
You know, they don't understand politics. Because they're not trained. I've been in politics before I was born. And, you know, when I started seeing this stuff, I mean, I questioned it. And then when in the training, it was the worst nightmare. I mean, I saw what was going on. It's pretty obvious. But you need to, again, look at administration and executive service appointments for why this came down. And there you go. And, you know,
now, Dolores Gresham's going to have a I'm sorry, but Dolores Gresham is going to have a committee here, an education committee. September? Are you tracking the date, Ed?
September 19th and 20th.
19th and 20th, that is correct.
Bottom line is we need to be there. We need to get everybody there that we can on that. And send your legislators, send your state senators all the information you have on Common Core. All right, we got a couple minutes left here, but hey, you know, Mike Davis from the British Army was kind enough to call us in and tell us that he is between Washington State and Canada training to confiscate our guns along with some of our forces and the Russian forces. So, wow.
You know, that
how long
have
you been over here in training?
You possibly misheard me. I'm not actually over there yet. I'm about to be deployed in a few days.
Okay, so you'll be there what time frame? I know you can't give exact information, but no later than you will be in Washington State.
I will be in Washington State no later than the 11th of Sunday.
Okay, all right. And that you're
Sunday
talking about 11th,
if, apologies.
The Fort Lewis area.
If I may ask.
Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, if I might ask the gentleman, how many troops are in this move? Do you have any idea? I mean, are we looking at moving a few platoons, or are we looking at moving a company or a battalion, or, you know, what are we looking at?
Assuming our sizes are the same, I'd imagine it wouldn't be that many troops. I don't think it's
okay.
I think the idea is for us to get trained, and then we can bring it back to the UK so we can perform the training back here instead of bringing everyone over there.
Trainer.
Okay. Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Training a trainer. All
gotcha.
I can.
I'm retired military, so I'm familiar with that term, among others.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
All I know
okay.
100% for sure is that definitely at least 100 men will be over there.
Okay. Well, hey, look.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We've got 10 seconds left. I've got to go. I appreciate all of you calling in. I appreciate the listeners out there. Thank you to our guests. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Representative Matheny. And we will see you next week. Take care.
Take care,
Dave. Good job.
Thank you.
Still there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm still here. Hello.
Hey, this is Dave. Oh, wow. Okay. So you just happened to be blogging and going through there, and you saw that, and you thought you would, let us know about it.
Yeah. I mean, from what I'm aware, I'm not entirely sure how the political system in America works, but it seems that conservatives have a link with, conservatives want guns in America.
Yes. Yeah, conservatives want guns. We want the right
yeah.
to keep and bear arms, yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I saw, I saw Conservative Nation Radio and I thought, these people, you guys will probably be,
Well, I'll do the digging that I can do to find out about this. And, I mean, we hear a lot of different things. I mean, there's all kinds of information out there. And it's one of these deals. If I didn't sound shocked, it's because, number one, nothing shocks me anymore in terms of this administration, in terms of our government. And I've heard these type of things in the past. I don't doubt them. But it's kind of like everything is believable. But because it's believable doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you mean, yeah.
But it would not shock me. It would not shock me. I don't think this embassy stuff we're hearing about, all these, there is something else to that. That's not, what they're telling us is not, they're not telling us the whole story.
Oh, entirely. I mean, it's strange, especially, there seems to be a lot of strange things going on recently. I know a few of my buddies, not in my regiment, but I met a few of my buddies I met last tour of duty. They're being deployed over to the British Embassy in Russia, which is something we don't normally do for some reason. They're being deployed over to the British Embassy in Russia. There seems to be a lot of weird troop movements going on, if you know what I mean, at the moment.
Yeah, the Brits to Russia. I mean, that's not normally what you would think. Wow. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I've got your info here on Skype. I may make contact with you in the future if that's all right.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
If I get
how long are you supposed to be in country? How long are you supposed to be in country?
That actually hasn't been revealed to us yet. We've been told to inform our families it could be anything from 2 weeks to 6 months.
Wow, that's pretty open-ended.
Yeah, yeah, I
that's
mean,
very open-ended. It makes no sense because if they're just doing a train the trainer, they will know how long the training takes.
Yeah, I know.
I'm retired military, so I've done this kind of stuff before, and that's wow.
It seems strange. I mean, I'm exactly where you are on this one. If it's train the trainer, training usually has a set period of days or weeks, so they can give you an exact time in which you'll be back on the ground back in England. That's
right.
What happens with every other training course I've ever done. I've had a day I'll be back in England and a rough time, depending on flights. But it just seems strange that they've left this one massively open-ended, and I think the idea is that they're going to inform us when we get there.
Right.
But until then, I have no idea. I could be there from 2 weeks to 6 months, which is insane.
Would you say that most of the people that are coming with you feel the way you do, or is it a mixed bag, or some people are just, well, hey, I'll do whatever they tell me. I'm, you know, just here to collect a check or whatever.
There's about, out of the guys I know 100% are going, there's about 15 who will follow orders. They do it for the check. I know I can confirm about 32 guys who I know are going, just speaking to the lads. And I know 15 of them will probably do it for the check, but the rest probably will, you know, invoke their right in denial like I will. Because, you know, it's our job to try and protect our country. It's not our job to go over to another country and take away your rights.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what unit are I don't get, well, you can't tell me what unit you're with. But you're in the Army or the Marines or the Brits or which?
I'm with the British Army, yeah.
British Army, okay. All right. What kind of unit? Just curious, if you can tell me.
I'm with a rifleman unit, so just a bog standard rifleman unit.
Oh, grunt.
Unit.
Okay, I was a grunt. All right, cool. British infantry.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, right. I'm not much more, you know. I thought I'll just go for something, you know. Something out there, and, you know, British infantry appealed to me the most, so.
How long have you been in?
I've only been in for about 2 years.
2 years?
Which means that hopefully I'll become a Lance Corporal sometime next year.
How old are you?
I'm only 21 at the moment.
Oh, wow. Okay. Young guy.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
All right. Well, hey, I may get in touch with you. I got your Skype here, and so I may get in touch with you. If that's all right, sometime here in the not too distant future.
Yeah, sure.
But, hey, I appreciate the call. And you know, you've got the right intuition that, you know, number one, it's wrong. It would be wrong to do that. Number two, could be very hazardous to your health.
Yeah.
Which you know that, of course. You're already in the infantry, so.
Yeah. Everything they make us do is hazardous to our health.
Yeah, yeah. Now, have they given you guys any pre-training? I mean, have they told you anything about, you know, Americans and how our guns and the, you know, how many guns we have over here and our IDs, our ideology in terms of guns and whatnot?
I know we've been I've got a manual over here which is it basically lists off the type of guns which were available for sale in the US. I've got an American slang book. Just so you know, because there's minor differences in language. I've got an American slang book. I've got the which I haven't read yet because it's too much reading. I've got the you know. I've got the Guns for Sale in America. I've got a book on basic American ideology as well.
Okay. All right. I was just curious if they had taught you anything officially about, you know, our culture in regards to guns. But, well, hey, I am going to have to go, and I appreciate you calling in. I really do. You're the first foreign caller I've had that I know of anyway. And But hey, take care, and I'll be talking to you in the future.
Yeah, sure. On that note, by the way, I'm not entirely sure what times I'll be on or off, depending on how long each training exercise is.
Right.
So you know, I'll probably be on around about this time most days, whilst I'm over there.
Yeah, and you're about 2 hours. You'll be 2 hours behind me there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Hey, thanks again. Good talking to you.
You too.
See,
have a good
day.
Care.
You too. Thanks. Bye.